Excited to be part of this process. Again, I want to echo, of course, my appreciation for all the commissioners, particularly Chair and Vice Chair, Kara Richter and Brian Emmerich, almost forgot your name, excuse me, and staff, BDS staff, Tim Marion again, also staff this commission, and I know in present we have Rebecca Esau, who's the division manager, got Kara Ferravante and Dave Skillet, who are staff that work on historic design reviews as well as historic preservation reviews. And so it's a collaborative process. In February, I believe, I was surprised because Tim had invited me to join and say a few words at the Landmarks Commission retreat, and I show up here, I think it was in Pettigrew room, and I thought it was just going to be the commission members, and the entire staff was there, and it was pretty amazing to see the energy and all the passion about historic issues and discussions around what works, what doesn't work, what can we do, how do we make this process better. And I was very impressed and, of course, proud that this is held in high regards internally and externally, and we appreciate the volunteer work that you do. I know it's taxing, but I know this is something you're committed to as well as staff and of course, city council. So, again, this report, I was here last year, say a few words again about the report. It's a new report, another year, but the work continues, and it's still very relevant and very important. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay,
thanks, Paul. Welcome, Kara and Brian. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Mayor Hales and City Council, my name is Kara Richter. I am the chair of the Portland Landmarks Commission, and I'm going to present a portion of the report, and then my co-chair, or my chair-elect, vice chair,
whatever
Brian,
I am.
Brian Emmerich will add the comedic relief or something. To open with, I this is bad for me to tell a joke right off the bat after I said that, but I wanted to mention that our retreat materials that I think you have this toothy grin on them.
Yes.
And I just want to disclose right off the bat that this toothy grin came from the Lair Hill design guidelines from 1980. The Landmarks Commission is not taking a position on fluoride. Maybe the fluoride folks took it from us back in 1980. We were ahead of the curve. We knew.
Everybody else is taking a position on fluoride.
Just why shouldn't we? Yeah,
right. Serving teeth.
Portland is blessed with a rich and distinctive heritage. Buildings, public spaces, and unique neighborhoods are the fabric which links our magnificent natural setting, cultural diversity, and complex history together. These elements are foundational to keeping Portland unique and livable, and maintaining these aspects of this city are a difficult task. The Portland City Council has charged the Historic Landmarks Commission with this responsibility. We are citizen volunteers appointed by the mayor to promote the protection and preservation of Portland's historic and architectural heritage, and to provide leadership and expertise on maintaining and enhancing Portland's architectural and cultural resources. The Historic Landmarks Commission identifies and protects buildings and other properties that have historic and cultural significance or special architectural merit. We provide advice on historic preservation matters, coordinate historic preservation programs in the city, and are actively involved in the development of design guidelines for historic districts. We take seriously these responsibilities, and as part of our mission, we submit this report as the fourth annual installment of direct accountability of the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission of the Portland City Council. The PowerPoint you received provides a summary of what we've been up to the last year. The commission met 16 times during 2012 and conducted retreats both this year and last year. Additionally, the commission chairs continue to share and coordinate with lunches. Gwen and I have met with the chair, Andre Baugh, of the Planning and Sustainability Commission to talk about issues. When we met a couple months ago, it was all about parking, which Landmarks Commission doesn't have a lot of interest in, per se, but it is a relevant issue because there are a lot of surface lots in historic districts, for example. So it's really great for us to sort of share ideas and bring up recent cases that have come up before us. Bureau of Development Service staff issued 120 Type 1 or 2 decisions in 2012, and only four of those cases were appealed. That is fantastic. I mean, that shows a level of competence in BDS staff that I think is really admirable, and they are doing such a tremendous job. I'm sorry that Tim didn't include, excuse me, the map he showed at the retreat that showed the area of Irvington as a historic district in size compared to the other historic districts. Irvington is not only the largest historic district in the state, it is the size of all of the rest of the historic districts in Portland combined. Mm-hmm. So the fact that staff was able to take in Irvington, start processing applications, have only four appeals is really tremendous. And they deserve all kinds of thanks for the wonderful work. Dave Skelton did this largely by himself until we've got some new help for him. So we're really grateful and lucky to have him. Another thing we've been busy with is 8 National Register nominations were reviewed and forwarded to the state. One that we think is really important is Buckman Historic District. Went forward. When we came before you last year, there was concern that Buckman was sort of derailed by the high review fees, and they are now submitted, and we're thrilled about that. This sort of leads me into the historic preservation successes, and I can't champion enough the HRCIP, Historic Resource Code Improvement Project. When we came last year, we sat here, and the room was filled with Irvington residents, I mean, with pitchforks, saying, what did we get ourselves into? This is a disaster. We have to fix it. And at the time, we all said, yes, we need to do something, but we don't know what. And Commissioner Salzman got together with Paul and Susan Anderson, and they came up with a plan. And I can't, it's amazing that we sit here now, and we have the adopted code improvement update adopted, and we have fees of $250 for minor improvements. I mean, what an endorsement for historic preservation. And the real beauty about it to me is you have the planners, you know, sort of like Gwen raised, you've got the planners who know how the codes all work together, and then you've got development services who know what the impact will be. And those brainstorming sessions with everyone in the room where we sort of talked about how is this going to work, and, you know, Brian sketching out how's this roof going to work out and how's this not visible from the street thing going to work out was a fantastic opportunity for all of us to learn. And I think it the result will be long-lasting. But it also brought to light, in my mind, the fact that we have so many outdated design guidelines. I mean, the Lair Hill ones that I was made the joke about were from 1980. The Skidmore Old Town Design Guidelines are from 1987. Views on preservation have changed. And we have different guidelines for different zones, for different districts, and the districts have the same periods of significance. So why are we treating these districts differently? We need to update these design guidelines, and we need to do it, and we can do it efficiently, and the HRCIP showed us that. We also have done some infill development. You know, we're just like when we're seeing an uprise of infill development in historic districts, and that's great. We need to continue on that effort. We also have another great success. We have the creation of the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources, which is a group of individuals who care about preservation, and it's another they coalesced around the HRCIP and the fee issue, but they are interested in being involved in the comprehensive plan adoption, the central city plans, and we're in constant communication with them, and they're a great resource. So I will turn it over to Brian to talk a little bit about priorities for 2013.
Yeah, thanks, Carrie. So last year we spent quite a bit of time obviously working with the HRCIP, which was great. And so this year we're looking forward to other areas of participation. And one that we've been working on right now is the Strategic Advisory Committee. Carrie and I are both rotating chairs on the West Quadrant Plan and participating in that. I just met actually with Nicholas Darn and Carl Lyle today and toured Old Town, Chinatown, and talked about a lot of the issues and ideas and thoughts there. So some of the things we see coming up that are particular interest for us as we participate in these plans as far as priorities are you know, number one, incentivizing and encouraging rehabilitation, and not just preservation, but also adaptive reuse, too. There was a great study that Green Building Services did nationally, actually, but focused one of the target markets in Portland, that showed that if Portland alone was to just reuse buildings that are likely to be torn down over the next 10 years, we would actually meet the national 15% of the nation's goals in carbon reduction. So it's a pretty mind-blowing statistic, actually. And, you know, furthermore, when we do those adaptive reuse or preservation-type projects, there's been studies that show that it's a great economic job creator because it's mostly labor. It's got to be local. So, you know, it really gives back a lot to the economy, too. So that's important as well for our goals there. You know, and then we've talked a lot about infill development and these parking issues. And a lot of these places like Close-In Southeast, those are historic streetcar kind of nexus places, you know. And they do have a lot of great, mostly streetcar commercial types of buildings in there. But there's a lot of really nice things that aren't actually on the current historic resource survey. So just understanding how we want to develop responsibly, thinking about these dense kind of nexuses of the neighborhoods and not losing those is important, I think. And then talking about the Historic Resource Survey, you know, the last time we did that as a city was 1984. That thing's pretty out of date. Mid-century modern, what didn't even exist as a preservation category back in those days. And it's a good time right now because we're doing this 2035 plan, which is a big look, but we're really doing that without this updated resource. So just one of our priorities has been trying to figure out, can we somehow do this, you know, either through participation with, you know, University of Oregon or maybe Portland State too. Bosco Milligan's volunteered some ideas there as well. But how can we get our arms around trying to update that resource inventory? So then thinking about new development too, infill development, and how we can be, you know, compatible with the existing resources there, primarily in terms of scale and field, not stylistically literal. So I think having some flexibility there is important too. And then just acknowledging that, you know, preservation and rehabilitation plays a significant tourist role too, obviously. So it's, you know, as Paul said, we're not the oldest city in the 50 states, but we are actually a historically important city. I mean, and, you know, between Seattle and San Francisco, I mean, we've got a lot. Portland was pretty big at the turn of the century, so we got a lot of resources here, actually, and it really contributes to our livability as a community and our identity as a community in that way.
The second priority that we identified during our retreat and we're really focused on is the concept of making preservation easier. We believe that if we can provide the tools to folks, especially all these new Irvington residents that are now sort of in our fold and Buckman residents who hopefully will be in our fold, if we can make it easier, we'll have more, you know, people will like preservation and they'll be more likely to endorse it to others, right? So we've identified a couple of how-to guides that we want to put together that we've created a subcommittee to work on. We're working with the Historic Resources Coalition, who's doing similar things with Irvington. They have done a windows and door guide that we're reviewing now and determining whether or not we can endorse it. A historic district how-to guide, so people know what they're getting into when they go forward with an effort like that. And a porches and awnings guide. And these things won't be formally adopted code language or anything. These will just be, you know, drawings and pictures of appropriate design techniques. A core element of encouraging preservation, we believe, as Brian mentioned, is the need for an updated historic resource inventory. And, you know, this is not a small, discrete project that, you know, is like the Historic Resource Code Improvement Project that could be done in a year. I mean, we had an initial estimate of $1 million, and that was a few years ago to do this, to do an HRI. We know that that's just not probably in a top priority for the city, but we are committed to making it happen. And to further that end, the city received a certified local government grant to conduct further survey work of unreinforced masonry buildings. That have not been seismically upgraded, that are highly susceptible to damage from an earthquake. As part of doing this work, the Landmarks Commission is working with the consultant to pick areas that are likely to be subject to greater development and to use this inventory work as to create a template that we can use and take to other areas. And hopefully, if once we get a platform of how we will collect data and the data we will collect, once we get that formulated, we believe we can roll that out to neighborhoods, to interns, to anyone who's interested, and have them fill the document, and we will create a resource inventory that way. And it's going to take a long time, but I'm committed to figuring out a way, especially because we've got so many interested volunteers. I mean, if Irvington can create a National Register District, they can certainly help encourage other neighboring neighborhoods to do an inventory. And again, until we know what's out there, we don't know where the future districts ought to be.
Yeah, so, and then not as positive of a topic, but, you know, continued need for enforcement, that's important to us as well. We ran into some cases in Irvington, and I think partly because it was a new historic district, but staff did a good job of shepherding those through, and Landmarks reviewed those on appeal. Those were some of the cases that we saw there and got those rectified, and so that we're holding the bar, you know, where we want it to be, and that others have a consistent message in terms of what you can build and how that's going to be enforced. Another area of enforcement that we've been pushing for is just how the city interprets signage. And in your, if you got the handout, you know, we've got some large billboard kind of super graphic signs in the historic districts, and, you know, thinking about these historic painted wall signs, and we understand, you know, that they're grandfathered in, they're existing non-conforming use, and we've got issues as far as freedom of speech in terms of how we can regulate those, but normally with the existing non-conforming use, you know, you need to replace like with like, and, you know, where we have a hand-painted sign, we're seeing super graphic vinyl banners, you know, attached to buildings with steel brackets and cables over the top of the face of the sign, and clearly that's a totally different message and look as to what was there, and then also seeing lighting and expansion of lighting permits once you're allowed to have that signage. So, and realizing as you look around, there are a lot of actually old hand-painted signs in Old Town, Chinatown, et cetera. So, you know, wanting to protect against that whole change in the look that could happen, because there's obviously a monetary incentive to be able to do these. You get a lot of revenue off those signs. So,
another thing that the commission has been concerned about historically and remains so is the interest in some kind of policy to prohibit publicly funded demolition or neglect. Landmarks Commission has been concerned about Portland Development Commission-owned buildings that are not maintained while PDC decides what to do with them, and that this sort of demolition by neglect is a real problem. And one of the things that Mayor Adams suggested, and we took him up on the offer, was an annual meeting with PDC, and we've kept that going. And last August, Brian and I met with PDC to talk about sort of their plans. And what the main concern with PDC had been that we don't know what PDC plans to do with these resources until it's too late, until the deals are done and the plans are in works. And so we had our meeting in August, and PDC during that meeting emphasized a shift in its focus from being a building developer to being more of a facilitator of private development. And that's great, because PDC hasn't been a great steward of historic resources as far as we're concerned. And but we remain convinced that PDC ought to prioritize historic preservation and adaptive reuse as a sustainable policy that ought to that they ought to encourage that of the private developers, as well as hold itself to that same standard. We have encouraged the adoption of a policy that restricts the use of urban renewal money or any money for the demolition of National Register properties, either intentionally or by neglect. And we've drafted some language. We will push for that inclusion in the comprehensive plan or provisions like that, because we believe that adaptive reuse is a green policy, and it is just as important as any other sort of LEED certified standard. So on that note, as it relates to PDC, I am in contact now with PDC directly about Centennial Mills, and I'm thrilled about that. They emailed me and told me about the execution of the Memorandum of Understanding, and I have an email out to the developer, and I have invited him to attend a Landmarks Commission meeting, and we're really hopeful, optimistic that that we will be able to at least know, if not help influence, how the Centennial Mills ends up redeveloping, because that is the top of our threatened and endangered resources list.
Yeah, and that's great. Hopefully they can get something going there. The topic I wanted to talk about next is the adoption of the Skidmore Old Town Historic Design Guidelines, which the commission, Art DeMiro, and myself worked really closely on. And this was about 5 years ago, forwarded, you know, as you guys probably know, for a vote. And we ran into some blockades around some of the five opportunity sites that were proposed at the time in the district, and just trying to resolve those issues. Now seems like a good time to bring that back to the front of the table, because we're doing the West Quadrant, obviously, downtown, and thinking about, you know, whether it's, we've invested a lot in these. I mean, we've spent about $120,000, actually, frankly, with the grant to get a pretty darn tight set of document together for the guidelines. Maybe there needs to be a couple of adjustments in there, but we'd really like to see that get forwarded and approved, because, like Carrie said, we're working with 1987 standards, and it's, we've invested a lot of resources, and we're concerned that, you know, it's been sitting off on the side for quite a while here. So I think if we can get that into play, that would really be helpful. And it's a good time with the West Quadrant plan happening now. So,
and I'd like to add that we're cobbling together sort of this mishmash of guidelines, and staff is doing a fantastic job at it, but it seems so sad that we have these design guidelines just sitting here, and they're just ready to go. And it's, this Skidmore Old Town is our key, it's ground zero for historic resources as far as we're concerned. And we need to get, we need this, the copy that I let Brian use to show you is, has Art DeMiro's notes on it. And I pulled it out of the cabinet today, and it just made me sad. So let's get those done. Threatened and endangered resources. I talked a little bit about Centennial Mills, and like I said, we hope that we have the mayor's support for continued annual meetings with PDC. The second threatened and endangered resource building that we've identified is the Portland Fire Department Engine House Number 2, and the Landmarks Commission sort of adopted this building when we were touring the new Blanchet House last fall, and we came, and standing across the street, what's this? And it's 100 degrees. What's this fantastic building? This is such a great building. You know, this is, we should do something here. And so we started making inquiries, and we understand from PDC that it has, the reason why it hasn't been redeveloped is because it has access challenges. And this photo we have of Max driving right in front of it. I mean, how could it have access challenges if the Max stops right, you know, in front of it?
That's a PDC-owned resource, too.
It is a PDC-owned resource. And, this is one of those that we would love to adopt and move our meetings here, you know, if we could just go in it. We'd love to just tour it if we could get in.
One of you knew somebody who could make that happen.
Yeah, I wonder who could help with that.
We'll have to sign a liability release since it's got a big U on it.
A lot of buildings have a U on it. They're full of people.
And another building that is identified has concerns about is Multnomah County Courthouse. I know there's a lot of discussions going on right now about that, and it's a challenge. And we remain committed to its protection. The last resource I want to talk a little bit about is the original Blanchet House, and not because the original Blanchet House is the most spectacular building in Japantown and Chinatown, but because we think the old Blanchet House is indicative of what is happening in Chinatown, Japantown, which is these missing teeth, this potential loss of character, this lone historic building with new buildings around it. What will happen to the old Blanchet House? This is a PDC-owned resource that is vacant. We were able to tour it. It's got some challenges. Brian said, you know, there's a lot of challenges to it. But how will Japantown, Chinatown turn out? And that will be part of the 2035 plan, and Brian's mm-hmm. working pretty diligently on coming up with some ideas on that. But again, we love the original Blanchet House, and we hope it can not decay into a place where it can't be used.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything to add? Or?
Oh, I would just say, you know, Chinatown in general as a historic district might be an endangered resource, just in the sense that, you know, it's a cultural historic district. So we're all kind of struggling also in this West Quadrant plan as well of understanding, well, what does that really mean? You know, the buildings aren't historic rock stars. You know, they're mostly old and, you know, one and two story. They don't necessarily have a Chinese heritage or an Asian heritage in terms of their use through time, but not necessarily in their physical embodiment. So how do you then kind of create that feeling in the district? And there are a lot of missing blocks and pieces too. So it's just trying to understand, you know, what do we want that to be in the future, you know, for the city? It's a little different district than, say, Skidmore Old Town, which has a very clear identity and, you know, a little bit more historic architecture that's kind of marquee in that sense.
So that concludes our report. I would like to thank the City Council for taking the time to allow us to talk a little bit about the things that we're up to next year and the things that we've been doing. Thank you again to Tim Heron and Paul Scarlett and all of Bureau Development Services staff and Planning and Sustainability staff. It makes our work much easier, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Great questions. You want to? I don't think you named everybody who's on the Landmarks Commission, or I don't know if they're here. Or
that's gonna okay. So there's me, Carrie Richter, Brian Emmerich, Paul Solomonu, who's our sort of resident archaeologist, Harris Moderazzo, who is an attorney and a member of the Bosco Milligan Foundation, Karen Carlson, who is a preservationist with Carlton Hart.
Mm-hmm.
She's with Hanna-Barry now. And Jessica Ingeman, who is a preservationist with Venerable Properties.
And Kurt Renzetta.
Oh, Kurt Renzetta is a preservationist with
Intrex, I believe.
Intrex, we think.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Further questions, comments for Carrie and Brian, staff? Thanks very much.
I actually have one question.
Yeah, sure.
So you do mention the Portland Public Schools and
yeah,
the bond levies passage. So the district is committed to
using
bond monies to preserve appropriately suitable structures?
They are, but, you know, they're going to need more bond money, I think. And they did do a fantastic inventory of their resources, and they did report to us.
Okay.
And we are discussing, you know, their plans as they progress.
In fact, so. Kirk Renzetta was one of the key players for that on our commission that did that for them separately as a consultant. But yeah, we met with them a number of times. They're actually the biggest historic property owner in the city. So they do have a lot of properties, and they're obviously significant too because they're embedded in the middle of communities and kind of serve as de facto parks as well and stuff. So yeah.
So will you be involved in permitting for the high school renovations?
Oh, the Washington High School?
No, Roosevelt and
Cleveland
Franklin.
Anything that comes through for a design review, I believe.
They're not landmarks.
They're not landmarks.
So, therefore, the answer would be no under current code. Mm-hmm. Right. It doesn't mean that we can't make sure their advice is transmitted in an audible way to the Portland School District.
Well, and they've shown an interest in, you know, coming to the table and talking about that. But yeah, that's obviously really important discussion to engage, especially when we're talking about, you know, a lot of the modernization and you know, seismic upgrades. Just thinking about how to do those sensitively too, and not just knocking down schools as well.
Well, and one of the key things I think about the draft comprehensive plan, it talks about buildings or areas that define neighborhoods, and it talks about natural resources that define neighborhoods. And I think that ought to be expanded to include buildings. Mm-hmm. Historic buildings, schools, churches, those define neighborhoods too.
Yeah.
And that would be a way to get to the need to list these resources, I would say.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks.
Others that are going to testify on this item?
We have
some folks signed up.
before others who have signed up.
Thank you, guys.
Very much.
Please come on up. Fred Leeson, Peggy Moretti, Jackie Peterson-Lomas, and Paul Falsetto.
Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Fred Leeson. I'm the president of Bosco Milligan Foundation. Our executive director, Kathy Galbraith, could not be here today, so she sent the village idiot.
I think not.
We are among the founders of the Portland Coalition of Historic Resources, and we greatly appreciate the staff's work and the council's work in the historic resources code improvement work. I mean, that was just an amazing to think that all that happened within a year. Kathy wanted to mention four items that she thought were important. We, of course, appreciate the commission's thoughtful and intelligent report. Kathy's four, and they're ones that you've all heard. One, the need to adopt the design guidelines for Skidmore Old Town. We are concerned about the future of both Skidmore Old Town and new Chinatown, Japantown, National Register districts. Both districts need preservation-focused planning strategy in the comprehensive plan work ahead. We want to emphasize the need for design guidelines. You've heard that for the other historic and conservation districts that will make it easier for property owners to understand what the right thing to do is. And, of course, we support the need to pursue some follow-up on the Portland Historic Resources inventory. And you heard the $1 million figure thrown around that it would cost to do that. I think with today's digital information out there through Portland Maps and Google Maps. Mm. I think a lot of this can be done by somebody sitting behind a desk. I don't know that we have to be out there driving up and down the streets.
Someone already has, right?
Yeah. those were the points Kathy wanted to make. I wanted to say that I think we are on the, first off, the great cities of this world respect the past as they move ahead, and Portland can be one of those great cities, and it's on its way to becoming one of those great cities. I think we're in a very special time right now because we have, as always, a dedicated and intelligent Landmarks Commission. You've got some city staff that are really bright and smart and know this stuff. You've got a lot of volunteers that care about it, both Bosco Milligan and Historic Preservation League of Oregon. And most of all, we now have a city council that seems to understand kind of the culture, economic, and environmental benefits of preservation. And that is a key piece that we have not always had. So we look forward to working with you in the future.
Hi, I'm Peggy Moretti. I'm the executive director of the Historic Preservation League of Oregon. And we are, the HPLO, as we're often known, is works statewide and with our friends at Bosco Milligan and elsewhere to restore, reuse, and pass forward Oregon's historic resources. And we very much want to express our support and our gratitude for the hard work of the Portland Landmarks Commission. Theirs is, as we know, a very difficult task, and sometimes it's very thankless, and they work so thoughtfully and generously. They give their time as these citizen volunteers. We want to echo pretty much everything that was in the Landmarks report, and which Fred just highlighted too, and again, particularly highlight and celebrate that important work on the Historic Resource Code Improvement Project. It was really an example of grassroots efforts, a lot of different folks coming together, and with the support of BDS and BPS staff too, it was just a really great cooperative effort that removed a significant roadblock or obstacle to historic districts, and that was just a real game changer, we think, for Portland and a great example for elsewhere. We also wanted to acknowledge the positive step that Carrie referenced in her report of that application of the CLG funds to conduct that partial survey of Portland's unreinforced masonry buildings. And we hope this is the beginning of a more aggressive effort to assess these assets across the city in a more comprehensive way. Many of these unreinforced buildings are historic ones, as you can imagine, places like the Deacon Building downtown or the New Market Theater. And we think it's really imperative the city start seriously tackling a practical strategy for the seismic upgrading of these buildings. It's both a preservation issue and a public safety issue, obviously. And it's something that the HPLO is working on as a state initiative, but obviously Portland can take great leadership there. And in fact, there's a lot of groundwork that's been laid. I might draw your attention to the Preservation Roundtable that our organization held last year focused on resilience in in historic buildings and masonry buildings, and a number of folks from city staff participated in that, and there's a really comprehensive report on our website that can lay out some strategies we think will work here in Portland and across the state. We'd also like to reiterate the importance of breaking that logjam in Skidmore Old Town that we've been talking about. You probably are aware we listed Skidmore as one of Oregon's most endangered places in 2012 because of the issues that just have been stalemating things there. Some folks on an informal basis have been bringing ideas to the fore that address some of the economic issues along with the design issues that are thwarting investment in that district, and we're going to bring those ideas forward into the planning process, but it really is an imperative to address both the economics as well as the design side, and I think also some process issues we can streamline going through design review and things like that. And finally, I one of the other Portland places that was on our most endangered list last year was the Jansen Beach Carousel. And we had been very hopeful that things were moving forward, and it's been pretty stalemated, though, in terms of finding a new home for that. And I think Commissioner Fish is stepping up on that, and it may have, in fact, had a conversation with the developer. But for those of you who don't know, we've been very stonewalled thus far in trying to have a dialogue with Edens Corporation on how to find a new home for that carousel so it doesn't leave Portland. And you can imagine all the generations of an affection that there is for that little icon of our history. So we just wanted to alert everyone that remains an endangered place at this moment, and you may see us turning up some volume on attention of that so people realize that that is something we need to attend to. But generally, we're so hopeful about the opportunities that are face us, and we really thank the City Council for what feels, at least to us, like kind of a new, fresh era of appreciation of these cultural and economic assets and these places that make Portland a real place with a capital P and so special. So thank you.
Thanks, Peggy. Thank you very much.
I'm Jackie Peterson Loomis. I'm a public historian, a retired historian emerita, and a Portlander for 25 years now, and I've been working in the Old Town, Chinatown, Skidmore area for about 15 years. I'm the founder of an organization called the Old Town History Project, and I'm the creator of a new project called The Clearing. And I'm here in part because Kathy also called me to come and speak particularly about what the commission is calling Ground Zero, and that is Old Town, Chinatown, Skidmore. I've heard a little bit of talk today about the new Chinatown, Japantown Historical District, and I want to compliment the Landmarks Commission on this report. I think it's very well written also, and I think it's very farsighted, and I certainly urge its adoption, and particularly I would like to see the fairly rapid return to a serious discussion about the design guidelines. I mean, it's really dragged on too long, and it's an important discussion. I mean, I think one of the things that I would like to emphasize and to thank those of people on the commission and in the neighborhood, and I think hopefully now in City Hall, about the possible distinction between these two districts. There's been a lot of emphasis on the Skidmore Landmark District and a lot of confusion about what the new Chinatown, Japantown District is all about. It's easy to say culture as opposed to architecture, but I think that most preservationists would say it simply, place matters. That the National Park Service really has designated these kinds of districts as national treasures because the places speak to the lived experience, the memories of the people. As one current owner of the new era across from the garden, Joanne Hong, who also owns the Hung Farlow building, said, you know, this is where the memories are. You destroy the places, and you destroy the memories and the story, meaning the history. And we are just beginning to plumb that history. This is this is one of the richest parts of Portland in terms of the multi-ethnic stories. I mean, these are founders of the city, but they're also working-class peoples of all ethnic origins, and we have a treasure trove there that we need to uncover, but we can't do so if, in fact, the buildings themselves disappear. We really need to find the language, the vocabulary that we can share, and the values that will preserve both of these districts and turn these neighborhoods into the most vital place in Portland. You think about other cities. the close-in neighborhoods are among the most desirable places to live. We have an underpopulated waterfront. We have an opportunity here to turn these into vital sort of accompaniments to our downtown retail core. And I hope to see that happen in my lifetime. Thank you.
And is this on?
I just pushed the button there. There you go.
We're live now. And batting cleanup, my name is Paul Falsetto. I work for Carlton Hart Architecture. 8322 Northwest 8th Avenue, and I am a proud member of the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources. And I found it particularly interesting coming here to support the Landmarks Commission that I get to hear the Design Commission speak ahead, because in essence what they're doing is they're providing the good building stock that our venerable commission and various nonprofit groups and you will look to preserve well into the future. And I can imagine easily that 50 years from now, sitting next to me might be at that time, Landmarks Commission chair. It might be a progeny of Kerry Richter, who knows, touting the wonderful new style called the millennial style, which are the projects that we're creating now at this time. And preservationists tend to think well into the future in that regard. Good buildings are created now, and we look at the good buildings that were created 50 years from now and beyond in preserving and reusing and engaging those properties. So in essence, we're all speaking the same language. We're just talking about different time periods in which we enact those sort of actions. The coalition had the privilege and was actually formed to work through the historic code improvement process. And in essence, what that did was that brought the citizenry into the discussion. We have our two bureaus with our talented directors and their staff. We have a very engaged city council with a very knowledgeable mayor. We have great staff throughout the city to begin to work on these issues, and the coalition brought forth the people's voice in an organized fashion, and I think that was really important. And together, we got something done, and I have to commend you for passing the improvement process project and also for adopting the $250 minimum fee. That was a game changer for us. That we can go to every neighborhood district and say, look, you can do basic bare maintenance on your building, and you can do it simply and economically and quickly through the process. And I would hope that we can take a look at the next steps, which for us is showing people how they can engage and update and remodel their buildings. And the user guides that Kerry mentioned are extremely important in that fact. And BDS has already published those sort of guides for the normal work that gets done through the permit process. We want specific guides for historic preservation. And that's handling the issue on one end, and on the other end, we already have what we consider to be state-of-the-art design guidelines, and that's for Skidmore Old Town. Now, the city paid good money for it, and the city got better value for it. As an instructor with the Oregon University of Oregon Historic Preservation Program, I use those guidelines as an example of how you write and direct good historic preservation work on a municipal level. And so I would hope that as we work on one end and teach the individual homeowners how to do simple work on their building, we can actually show the city and the nation what really state-of-the-art design guidelines look like, how they're approved, and how they're enacted. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else signed up to testify?
That's all who signed up.
Oh, come on up. Afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Lightning. I respect the fact that you want to preserve the older buildings throughout this city, but one of the problems that I do have is that I think people fail to really look at the amount of cost it takes to implement some of these ideas and the holding time of these properties that the city has to pay. And one of the things that I would like to really maybe have research is what is the expense to hold these buildings? I mean, when you have a vacant building sitting there for year after year after year running down and you have these great ideas but they're not being followed through, the carrying costs can get so high that no matter what you end up trying to do, you're going to have to project your return on your investment probably 10, 20, 30 years out. The reality is some of these properties that are owned by PDC should be sold. They should be sold. And yes, they should conform the new buyers to some of this historic standards. I do agree with you on that. And maybe we should look at possibly even doing sales that we can actually buy the property back 15 years at a reasonable appraised value. That way we're not carrying all the cost. That way the new investor is literally putting their money into the properties and we have a chance to actually get it back in the future already developed, because these carrying costs can get out of line. And the reality is we have to look at this as an investment. We have to look at a reasonable return on our money. And if we're not doing that, I think we're just going to have a bunch of budget shortfalls in the future. It has to make economic sense. And if it means letting the private developers step in, offering them great financing, offering them possibility of buying it back from them in the future, getting a great return on their money, then maybe we should look at that also. Thank you.
Thank you. Good point. Thanks. All right. I think we're ready to take a roll call on the report. Motion, please.
Move acceptance.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you again. This is a great afternoon session. Very thought-provoking presentations by Design and Landmarks Commissions. Again, thanks to all the individuals who serve on the Landmarks Commission. It takes a lot of time and patience, but you're working with historic resources, so I guess that comes with the territory. I really appreciate some of the buildings you've highlighted that are in danger, and certainly the call to action on Skidmore Old Town design guidelines. It's something I think with the new mayor here, we need to, and it's been some time, that we need to take a look at getting something done again. So thanks again for your thought-provoking report, and thanks again to the BDS staff for their great work. Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you to the volunteers of the Historic Landmarks Commission. Your work is greatly appreciated and very helpful as on various projects that come to council. I also am very anxious to see the Skidmore design guidelines coming to council. Let's have a decision one way or the other and get something adopted. So I hope that that will be something that will be moved forward soon. I'm also reminded of this blunder of the update of the code and the $250, and that during that discussion we asked Director Scarlett to tell us what the impacts in terms of cost on that were. So we probably need to fold that back into the budget discussions and get a report on whether the numbers of applications coming in so far are such that we need to add something to the BDS budget. Note to all of us and to self. Fred Leeson said, "The great cities of the world respect the past as they move ahead." And I think that encapsulates what we're trying to do both with the Design Commission and the Historic Landmarks Commission. And I'm very proud to live in a city where citizen volunteers work with staff and elected officials to be the best that we can be. Aye.
Hales.
Well, I want to close my comments with two reflections, one of them personal and the other procedural. On a personal level, I put myself through college with construction jobs, and my first job after college was renovating old buildings in Charlottesville. And so when I was first serving on the city council 20 years ago, I was I thought I knew what I was talking about when it came to renovating old buildings. And I was really persuaded at first glance that Gretchen Kefouri was nuts when she thought that the Simon Benson House could be moved and preserved. And I thought that the McMiniman brothers were nuts when they thought that the Kennedy School could be restored and made into a community treasure. And I was really glad to be proven wrong about both of those. And what I learned from that experience is not only that I didn't know everything about construction that I thought I knew, but that a creative partnership with community support could accomplish something in terms of saving and creatively reusing these great old buildings. So those were really formative experiences, teachable moments for me in how this gets done. And I think you've mentioned some examples here today of places where I'm very eager to try to see that kind of creative partnership and to help that kind of creative partnership come together again. The procedural reflection I want to make is that we've had a remarkable hour and a half here this afternoon, really thoughtful presentations from these two citizen commissions great citizen testimony, and two documents that are readable, provocative, and 10 pages long. And I don't know whose idea that was, but I'm going to give Paul Scarlett credit. I'm going to a meeting, by contrast, tomorrow morning at a local public agency that will go unmentioned, where I have a 100-page document in my briefing book for tomorrow morning that manages to say much, much less in those 100 pages than you two commissions and the staff that support you have managed to say in 20. So bravo for both great work and a great presentation and a document that actually not only did we all, as Commissioner Novick noted, enjoy reading, but that we're going to be referring back to in the work ahead. So thank you for a job well done, and I'm very pleased to vote aye. Thank you all, and we're adjourned.
Check your public schedule to see what